Hey, welcome to Crossroads. My name is Hannah.
And I'm Kyle, and we are here to guide and equip you for the adventurous life that God has made you for.
Now, this week has had, a lot of crazy stuff happen.
National Popcorn Day.
Okay, happened. Wasn't on the
That's
list.
A little bit crazy.
That is a tiny bit that exists.
A small amount crazier than that is that the Cincinnati Bengals, my hometown team, got their first playoff win in 31 very long years.
That is a long time. I wasn't even born the last time.
You weren't born.
I'm telling you, that is crazy.
St. Joe of the Borough, not
wasn't
yet born.
Wasn't born either.
Hero of the football.
It's
out there. Pretty amazing.
Okay, I believe you. It's crazy. Okay, you're right.
Crazier than that is this story we're actually diving into today.
Yeah.
A story about a guy named Daniel who got thrown into a literal den of actual lions.
With lions in the den. And it's crazy. And so let's hear from our senior pastor, Brian Tome, right now and what he has to say about it.
Story of a faithful man and the unmatched power of God. After being taken captive from their home city, Jerusalem, to an unknown land called Babylon, four very special royal Israelites were chosen to serve the king: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Today, we focus on Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, better known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or the three Hebrew boys. The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, loved himself so much that he put a huge statue to remind people of his imperial power. And he wanted everyone to worship it whenever they heard the special music. Everyone. But the Hebrew boys, men, boys too, meant they were not about it. Today, we explore their story and what it means for our life.
Predictable patterns lead to predictable outcomes. Your life is perfectly designed to get what you're currently getting based on the things you're predictably doing. This is what we find from Daniel's life we've been looking at in this series. Daniel is this faithful person in the midst of faithless times, and he's faithful because he's predictable. He keeps doing the same things again and again, over and over. So just for recap here, Daniel now for decades has been serving the Babylonian Empire. The Jews have been captured and they're in exile and they're under their oppression. And Daniel was drafted into their executive training program because he's good looking, he's smart, he's bright. And time again, he keeps doing these crazy things. These patterns emerge in his life because he's very predictable in the things that he's doing to form himself spiritually. This is the way you and I are. What we're doing is giving us what we're getting. And whenever somebody starts to elevate their game and get to a place that's on a higher level than everybody else gets upset. This is what happens here in Daniel 6 with Daniel and his peers, his contemporaries. Let's just read a little bit, and then I'll talk about it. Daniel chapter 6, verse 3. This Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. An excellent spirit was in him. People looked at him. They said, there's something different about you, something special about you. Is anyone doing that with you and I, looking at us and saying, there's something different, special about that person? The satraps are this ruling elite class that were given a section to oversee in the empire, and they were supposed to collect taxes and all that stuff, and they kept a slice of the pie as well. And these people are really jealous of the things that Daniel is experiencing, the things that is happening. This is the way it is for us today. We get really jealous and upset when somebody's getting ahead of us. The satraps are really upset that Daniel is getting ahead of them. When I was a little kid, I'd go down the beach with my parents and you'd go on this long pier and they'd have these guys who are getting crabs. I don't mean crabs in their underwear. I mean crabs that they were getting, maybe those too. I mean crabs that they were getting in the beach and they're putting them in a bucket. And it's fascinating. If you get one crab and you put it in the bucket, what do you need? You need a lid that goes over top of it. You get three crabs, four crabs, put them in the bucket. You don't need the lid anymore because all the other crabs in the bottom, as soon as one starts to climb out, will grab him and pull him back down. We're like crabs. We get threatened when someone elevates their game. We get threatened when somebody has a special spirit inside of them. We get threatened when somebody is getting things that we aren't getting. This is the way it is with satraps. They're threatened and jealous. This is the way it is with us today, which is why so many people hate on you and I. Entrepreneurs.com, back in an old article in 2015, says why the most successful people have the most haters. The article said this: haters hate on you because you're doing what they cannot, will not, or are too afraid to attempt. Haters are a natural part of growth. There is one way to avoid having haters: sit on the sidelines, do nothing, don't set goals, be average, and no one will judge or hate you. We get upset when somebody has a more excellent spirit than us and they're getting closer to having a life that's prosperous than we are. We hate so much because this is the way we are. A leading theologian of our time, T.A. Swift, put it this way: because the players gonna play, 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 and the haters gonna hate, 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 hate. Baby, I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake. I shake it off. I shake it off. Woo hoo hoo. Shake it off. That's a theologian we can all listen to. And we have listened to that theologian many times. Daniel tries to shake it off. But unlike us, where we shame people in the social media sphere, Daniel actually has physical harm that's going to come his way. Let's keep reading here. Then the high official and the satrap sought to find ground to complain against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could not find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground or complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." They want to pull him down. They want to bring him down. The problem is they can't figure out how to, because the guy never does anything wrong. They think the only way we're gonna get him to do something wrong is we redefine morality and have him step outside of the bounds of something he's currently doing that we can outlaw. So that's what they conspire to do. They go to the king, they say, "You know, king, we've got our own theology, we've got our own divinity and our Godhead. We should just make official law. If anyone prays to any God other than the ones that we approve and the ways that we improve, that they should lose their life." The king is like, that's fine. So he sets it in motion, says, "Yes, that's good." And these guys are like, "Aha, we got him." When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and he prayed and he gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. They know that Daniel was going to pray. In fact, he is incredibly predictable about it. Oh, some time ago, I had somebody who was trying to run a smear campaign on me and trying to get people who either worked around me or didn't work real, real close to me but knew of me to think less of me. And one of the things this person said was, "Well, Brian's so predictable. He's so predictable. If you say this, he's going to do that. If you do this, he's going to say that. He's so predictable." And they meant it as a slam. And as I heard it trickle back to me that I was being called very predictable, I thought, "It's great. I'll take that. Great." Predictable patterns produce predictable outcomes. I want to be predictable. That's also being known as faithful. Not just faithful to my patterns, but I want to be faithful to God. Daniel has this predictability that they want to try to use against him. They want to slam him because of his predictability. They go, "Oh, Daniel always plays to this one God, the God of Israel, not our God." That's one thing he always does. 2, he always prays towards Jerusalem. 3, he prays 3 times a day, the same time every day. He gets down on his knees and he prays to his God in Jerusalem 3 times a day. Let's just outlaw that and we will eliminate him. That's exactly what they do. Daniel reads this document that he has to pray a certain way to certain people. And what does he do? He still does his predictable pattern. Now, this is really a little confusing because he's at this point, he's 70, maybe 80, maybe. This is older. He's been through like 3 or 4 different kings at this point. He's an older guy. He's not just a young upstart. He's an older guy. And this is the way he's been doing it. And maybe he would have had friends who have said something like, Daniel, dude, this idea of praying to Jerusalem, that's nowhere in the Bible. It's not there. Muslims pray to Mecca. That's actually in their holy scripture, in their Quran. But the Bible never tells Jews or Christians to pray towards Jerusalem. It never tells us do it 3 times a day or have prayer 3 times a day. It never tells us to have exactly the same time every day to pray. It never tells us to hit our knees as the only way to pray. Daniel could have prayed another time a day. He could have gone to another position. He could have gotten away from the window. Any of these things. Pray another time a day. Don't go on your knees. Don't pray by the window. Don't pray this. Any of those things. If he just eliminated one of those things, a world of pain wasn't going to be coming his way. But no. He thinks to himself, I have the predictable outcomes in my life because of the predictable patterns in my life. And this is a pattern that has brought me spiritual fruit, and I'm not going to forsake it. So he follows through on his pattern yet again. Do you know what your patterns are? What are they? What are the things that you predictably do like clockwork every day, every week, every month, every year? You know what they are. Do you have any? I know this. If you can't identify predictable patterns you have, you don't have predictable outcomes that you want. I'm not going to tell you all the different patterns you have to have today, but I'm telling you, you have to have some, and you've got to know what they are, and you've got to faithfully hit that nail all the time. That's how faithfulness is born. That's how you rise above it. That's how you get an excellent spirit in you. That's how you go to another level.
Real quick, I want to tell you about giving and why it's a critical spiritual act. And it's going to be quick. I promise. Only 30 seconds. Go. Giving is something we do in an effort to show our gratefulness to God. It's to say, even if you never do anything again for me, God, you have done enough. If that's something that you want to be a part of, you can go to crossroads.net/give for more. Now back to the message.
Daniel is not going to forsake this for 1 minute. They come up, they find him like, aha, we got you. They grab him, they take him off, they take him to trial, and his punishment comes his way. Let's take a look at what happened. Actually, I won't read all of it to you. Here's what happens. He comes back, the king sees this. He's like, oh no, I should have known somebody was going to try to set up my man Daniel, because Daniel has done amazing things for whoever was the king of Babylon as Daniel served him. Here's what it says. May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you, the king says. And a stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. And this guy is pinned. He's got to now do what he's written down, what's in the code that he created. He's got to uphold his kingly integrity and follow through on what he said. So he says, take him and throw him in the lion's den. Take a rock, put it over top the mouth of the hole, and put a rope over it. And he signs it, or he doesn't sign it. He actually puts a seal on it, which when they put to take a rope over the rock, over the crack, put some wax in it, take a signet ring and put it in that. And he would do that so that if anybody came up to it, they would know they should never remove that seal. And therefore, Daniel is for sure going to stay down with the lions, and he's going to die, so they believe. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. The king is stressed out. He doesn't like that he's done this, but he does it anyway. And he doesn't sleep well. No diversions are coming to him. In other words, he says, hey, my normal entertainment, I don't want my normal entertainment. Don't bring it my way. I'm just freaked out and I can't sleep. I'm beside myself. He doesn't like that he's been set up and that his buddy, spiritual buddy, the person who's brought him spiritual value, Daniel, is now going to be dead. And the story continues. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. And he came near to the den where Daniel was. He cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to serve you from the lions? This comes up a couple times this chapter. Who you serve continually. Daniel's God, who he serves continually. He has a predictable pattern of serving his God continually. He does it like clockwork. Now, I'll tell you one of the frustrating things about this chapter is there's some things in the Bible that I want to know that it won't tell me. It tells me he's put in the lion's den. This isn't a den that's out in the wild where they all say, oh, here's where the lions are in this cave. We're going to go out there. We're going to put the stone there. No. Later on, it talks about throwing them down into the lion's den. This is a torture chamber that the Babylonians have dug out a pit, and they just throw people in there. It's easily accessible. You know where it is. You can just go in there, and you see where the lions are, and then you see all the bones, and there's where we throw people to get munched. Daniel was thrown in there, stone put on top of it, and what I want to know is this. What happens inside of the den? Like, there's these lions in there, right? What's he doing with the lions in there? Spoiler alert, the lions aren't going to eat them. This is going to be a miraculous save that God gives to Daniel. What's Daniel doing in there? What's he doing with the lions? Is he petting the lions when he's in there? Or are the lions just sleeping and he's sleeping and it's no big deal? They never talk to or see each other for hours? Or is Daniel petting them? Is he going to, oh, my own little lion. I will love him and hold him and squeeze him and pet him because he's my own little lion. Is that what Daniel's doing with the lion? What is going on in there? We don't know. I'd love to know. Point of this story isn't the lion. It's actually the king who's pacing, the king who can't sleep, the king who doesn't want his normal form of entertainment, the king who first thing in the morning runs, rolls away the rock, says, Daniel, are you okay? The king, the ultimate king, your God, whom you serve continually, has he saved you? The king, who doesn't share the spirituality of Daniel, wants to know how Daniel's doing because Daniel has offered value to him and other kings before him. Daniel has told them dreams. Daniel has given them interpretations to dreams. Daniel has read the writing on the wall. That's another scene from the book of Daniel that we're not going to get into this series, where there's a hand that goes up and writes on the wall. He reads the writing on the wall. There's so many things that are in our culture that are based on biblical stories that we don't even know. Daniel's able to interpret a language as a hand comes and writes on a wall. Daniel has a power, and he's given value to the king, and he's not happy about this at all. That's the pain. And here's my ask for you. Is there anybody who has different spiritual beliefs than you that really needs you in their life? Is there anybody that doesn't have your ideas or doesn't have your patterns, but who gets major value from you and they want you there? This should be the way that Christians are. Whatever city we reside, there should be people who have completely different spiritualities and don't believe in our beliefs, who should be grieved if we ever left their city because poor people get fed while we're in their city. Because people who have no hope get hope when we're there. Because we are encouragers. Because we bring jobs. Because we bring generosity. Because we bring levity and we have a sense of humor about us. It's a bad thing where many people think that Christians are bores. No one thought Daniel was a bore. He was a value add. He was a threat to many, but he was a value add that they wanted around him. So let's see what happens when the king goes to see Daniel. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. He's affirming an authority position that doesn't have his same spirituality. We can learn something from that. My God has sent his angel and he shut the lion's mouths and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no harm. And then the king was exceedingly glad. He's like, I need you in my life and in this kingdom. That's the value that you and I should bring. And then the king goes immediately from thankfulness that Daniel's here to flip-flopping over and wanting vengeance for the people who put them here. There. Here's what it says. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions. They, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. Finally, we find out about what the lions are doing. These are not sleepy lions. These are man-eating lions. He takes these folks and their whole lineage, wives, kids, dogs, gerbils, all of them, says, get them in there. I'm going to wipe out their whole lineage, the future of potential generations that would be malicious like this. I want them gone. And this is a godless king who doesn't have the morality of my God and your God. That's what this king does. Throws them down in the pit. And finally what the lions do. The lions, it says, they get up.
If I were king of the forest, not prince, not duke, but king.
Name that movie. What was that movie? Come on. Wizard of Oz, come on. Every real American knows Wizard of Oz. Doesn't matter how old you are. These lions, as bodies are falling down, before the bodies hit the ground, they snatch them out of the air, break and eat them, break their bones and start munching on them. These are hungry lions, probably because God was keeping them from eating Daniel. They're like, oh man, something kept me from eating a human being just a couple hours ago. Not now. I got to get them while I can. And these people get their fill. What I love about this story, it's really not about the lions. It's also maybe not about Daniel, but it's about how God does a new thing in the heart of the king. The king, in essence, gets converted, or at least gives the best spiritual verbiage he could in talking about the one true God. Here's what he says. For he is the living God, enduring forever. This is the king saying this. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So Daniel prospered. This king has basically a spiritual awakening, and Daniel prospers. Why does Daniel prosper? Because he has predictable patterns. Your predictable patterns will dictate your level of prosperity. Now, I know that some of us hate that word prosperity because we know that there's people who are preachers that just love to tell people to keep giving, 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 because if you don't give, you're not going to be prosperous. I'm not talking about some false theology like that. I am just saying the word prosperity is in the Bible. It doesn't always mean financial prosperity. There's people who are very, very prosperous, but aren't financially rich or are even barely getting by. But to be clear, God does want to prosper you relationally, spiritually, emotionally. And how does he prosper you? He prospers you the way that Daniel gets prospered, through predictable patterns that lead to predictable outcomes, the predictable outcome of prosperity. You have to know what your predictable pattern, what are they? Like, when do you read the Bible? When is that? We've looked at the research and been very clear. 4 times a week. If you read 4 times a week, change will come to you. When do you do that 4 times a week? It doesn't matter when you do it, but you got to do it predictably. Every time you go to the bathroom, that would work. For me, it's first thing I do when I'm in my house, when I'm out camping or something like that, I'm not reading the Bible in the mornings. So this is a different thing. But when I'm around my house, predictable pattern every morning, I have some Bible intake. Do you know when it is? Do you know when it is your predictability of how you give? I had a little extra money I got recently. I did an outside speaking engagement and they send me a check. And what do? My first predictable pattern is I give God the first fruit. So I turn around, give him the first 10%. The Bible tells me to do that. And it's what I've been doing for a long, long time. It's a predictable pattern that brings a predictable outcome and level of prosperity to me. Do you know when you connect with your girlfriend? Do you know when you connect with your boyfriend? Do you know when you have meaningful conversation? Do you know when you pray with your spouse? Do you know when you tell your kids precepts about God? Well, if you just have a value to generally do it, you're generally not going to do it. You have to know it's at the dinner table. It's on Saturday mornings. It's at this. Is that what are the predictable? You have to know your predictable patterns to have predictable outcomes of prosperity. And one we're doing and elevating here this year at Crossroads is the Bible Challenge. Get into the Crossroads app or open up your paper Bible. Do it 4x a week. Journal there. See what the rest of us are doing. And grow from the rest of us and build into the rest of us by giving us your insights. And you'll find you're going to get into a predictable pattern that's going to give you a predictable outcome of having a prosperous life. That's only what God wants from you. It's what God wants for you. And it's what Daniel had.
And I'm going to remember that. Predictable habits is what dictates your prosperity. That's super good.
And that's what Daniel had.
That's absolutely. And that's what we're doing as a community. We're calling it the Bible Challenge. And whether this is your first time watching or 1,000th time, doesn't matter. You can jump in with us. Here's what you need. The Crossroads app, which is completely free. This app lets you and me and Hannah and everybody else in the community read the same chapter of the Bible and journal about it together. You just click right here. And you
already did yours today.
I did do mine today.
I didn't do mine yet, but I'm going to do it. And if you want to do it, you can go to crossroads.net/Bible Challenge. And not only that, but you can do that and find the app, learn more, and you can get this cute little guidebook. And I call it cute because I think it's cute, but it's more than just cute. It's freaking helpful. There's like all this sort of context in here that just helps you understand what's happening in Daniel and enhances your Bible reading.
Okay, Crossroads, we are in your corner. If we can help you in any way, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can email me directly, kyle.ransom@crossroads.net. We'd love to pray for you if you have anything going on in your life or whatever else you need. Let us know. We're here for you. We'll see you next time.
There is a way that leads to life. It's not the paved path, well-lit, well-traveled, known. It's the ancient path, narrow, forgotten, wild. Few are willing to walk it. But those who do find what they've been searching for. Be one of them. Walk the way that leads to life and find faith in a faithless world. Happening now in the Crossroads Anywhere app.